This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency. Your Israeli property is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, some moving footage of Yarden Bibas completing a Torah scroll by writing in the last three letters, a special Torah scroll that has been written in memory of his family, his wife Shirin, his sons Ariel and Kfir, who were murdered by Hamas in captivity. And of course, Yarden has now come back to find the reality of the fact that his family are no longer with him. The funeral was last week, and a special Torah scroll was dedicated in their memory. And Yarden wrote the last three letters, a Shin for Shiri, an Aleph for Ariel, and a Kaf for Kfir, the three last letters, one for each of the members of his family. So that was a very moving moment, and hopefully something that gives some comfort somehow to not only Ariel, who is clearly in a state of shock, but also to the wider Bibas family, and indeed to all of us here. Who are all in shock. Another event that is worth mentioning as a quick snippet that happened yesterday at the Knesset was a debate on the issue of establishing a national commission of inquiry to investigate the events of October the 7th and beyond, the lead up, of course, to October the 7th and beyond. And the Knesset had been demanded to debate this matter by the submission of 40 signatures of members of Knesset, which forces the coalition to raise this as an agenda item in the Knesset. And there were 40 families from the hostage family group who requested to attend. They are protesting very vehemently that there should be a national commission of inquiry. The coalition government, led by the prime minister, against the idea of setting up a national commission of inquiry. And my question is a very, very simple one. If this is not the right event that justifies a national commission of inquiry, what is? Why do we even have a tool called a national commission of inquiry if it's not going to be used for events like this? This is just classic. It's got National Commission of Inquiry written all over it. And yeah, of course, the hostage families, I think, have the support of the wider Israeli public and beyond in demanding the National Commission of Inquiry. Unfortunately, at the moment, the Knesset has the majority coalition, which is supporting the idea of not establishing a National Commission of Inquiry. So there were some quite nasty scenes yesterday, some violent scenes where even the Knesset guards were forced to not allow some of those families to enter the Knesset. They tried to force their way in. There were scuffles. It was all very, very unpleasant and unnecessary, because I think those families do have a right to have their say and to protest.
What is the reason that they're giving not to have one? I mean, because no one's asking for anything other than a national inquiry is about information, and it's about trying to understand what went wrong. So what would be the argument not to have that?
I think it goes a little further than that, because inevitably with a national commission of inquiry, people are required to take responsibility for failure.
Sure.
That really is something that comes out of a National Commission of Inquiry. And I think that that is where the whole issue really rises and falls because members of the current government clearly will be fingered as having been responsible for some of those failures leading up to October the 7th and beyond. And I think there's a certain fear that they will be forced to take responsibility, and there might well even be some further consequences as a result of that. We recall that, for example, when a National Commission of Inquiry was established to investigate the Yom Kippur War, there were some significant consequences. But at that time, the government, even though was held responsible and members of the government were held very much responsible for the failures, they were willing to stand up and accept that responsibility and whatever the consequences were that arose from those. And if the members of the government feel that they have a good defense, in other words, very often looking back on an event, you can always be a lot smarter. You always have all the information. It's always obvious that that mistakes were made. But during the course of events, when decisions are being made, and with the information that you have available at that time, many of the decisions could potentially be defended if people are given a little bit more information about what was considered at that time, what the motivations were, and why decisions were made as they were made. Why, for example, the intelligence that was being gathered at the time wasn't taken note of, why it was that they decided not to believe some of the intelligence that was clearly pointing to an imminent attack. And again, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, when you know that certain events have taken place numerous times over the past weeks and months and years and have resulted in nothing, and another event which looks very, very similar happens again, you don't necessarily want to stand up and say, oh, this time the situation is going to be entirely different and therefore we need to respond differently. So there may well be some defenses which people could mount in order to justify why decisions were made in the way that they were at the time. But I think that that needs to be examined. And unfortunately, by not setting up the National Commission of Inquiry, those examinations are effectively swept under the carpet.
Yeah, I mean, can there really be public, anyone in the public that who isn't an affected party in terms of government, for example, who would say, no, I don't think it's a good idea. We shouldn't do this. We should just get on with our lives. Surely not.
I think that if the current government doesn't agree to set up or effectively blocks the setting up of a National Commission of Inquiry in the way that they are at the moment, that inevitably, when that government sees through its time and a new government is elected and a new Knesset is elected, I expect that a National Commission of Inquiry will need to be set up at that point and will be set up at that point whenever opportunity arises. This issue is not going to go away. And it might well have to wait until the end of the current term of the Knesset, the end of the current government, in order to be set up. But inevitably, it will have to happen.
Yeah, that is. There's no doubt that is the way forward. Israel has issued an ultimatum to Hamas. What is the ultimatum?
Well, yesterday the ultimatum was issued to Hamas to say not only are we stopping the flow of goods and aid into Gaza, as we discussed yesterday, but more than that, if by next weekend, so not the current weekend, next weekend in 10 days from now, if no hostages have been released by then, we will go back to war. That is the ultimatum that the government has issued, that the IDF will re-engage in Gaza. And I'm very fascinated to understand what that means, because I mean, I can think we can all understand what it means when we say the IDF will begin further operations in Gaza. The question is, what will the IDF be doing now? And let's not forget that as of tomorrow, we have a new chief of general staff in the form of Eyal Zamir, who is a very seasoned diplomat and very seasoned soldier. He's been an advisor to the prime minister on military matters. He's been the head of the Ministry of Defense, and he's been a candidate to be the chief of general staff on two previous occasions. This is his third time that he was on the shortlist to become the Chief of General Staff, and he has now been appointed. And tomorrow we will see the changeover from Herzi Halevi to Eyal Zamir. Eyal Zamir has already called his senior generals together to discuss what may happen in 10 days from now, assuming that the IDF will re-engage in Gaza. Now we also know a lot more about the hostages and what's happening in Gaza right now with those hostages. We have a lot of intelligence that's been brought back to us from the hostages who've been released, including some very chilling information that Eli Sharabi brought back. He undertook an interview and he had some very, very chilling words to tell us about what happens in the tunnels in Gaza when Israeli politicians make statements. And what Eli Sharabi said was that every time an Israeli politician made what he termed an irresponsible statement, he said, "We were the first to feel the consequences." He says they were told, for example, in Gaza, that authorities weren't giving Palestinian prisoners food so the hostages wouldn't eat. He said the same applied to beatings and to the allowance of showers while they were in the tunnels in Gaza. And he went on to say that the Israeli Air Force bombed the house of one of the individuals who was holding them captive. And when his house had been bombed by the Air Force, that individual came in to where the hostages were being kept, and he punched and kicked Eli in the ribs to such an extent that Eli claims that he couldn't breathe for the best part of a month, that he struggled to breathe because of the beating that he received as a result of the actions that were taken by the IDF and words that were stated by Israeli members of government. So we have to be very cognizant of what impact our actions and our words have on those hostages who still remain captive in Gaza. There are more than 60 of them still, even though we understand that something like half of them now are known not to be alive. But that means that half of them are alive. And there are stories and information that have come out from the hostages who've been released about exactly their state and what is happening there. And so it's very difficult for me to understand what will happen next and how the IDF will use this information in order to try to achieve the most pressing objective. And the most pressing objective right now is not to take out revenge against the Palestinians, and it's not to destroy Gaza. It's to release our hostages, first and foremost, and second of all, to ensure that Hamas cannot return to power. And we've seen that after more than a year, something like 15 or 16 months of war, Hamas somehow are arising from the ashes and are showing power in spite of everything that they've been through. So what have we learned from that? So this ultimatum is an interesting one. And I think probably there is little choice, because the Israeli government have said, well, if they're going to stop releasing our hostages, and that is our primary objective in this war, we can't just sit on our hands and watch the situation. We are obliged to take some action. The question is whether the action that can be taken will eventually result in the release of the hostages. And that's really got to be the critical primary objective.
Yeah, there's no doubt, but it is becoming more and more complicated. Certainly, that is for sure. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to just ask you about the attack in Haifa yesterday. What happened?
So there was an attack that took place in a shopping center in Haifa, in the Haifa area yesterday. An individual began to shoot people around him in that shopping center. In the end, a man has been killed and a number of other people had been seriously injured. And immediately, of course, this was labeled to be a terror attack. And all security forces went on high footing in that area. And then when we began to scratch below the surface a little bit more, then a few interesting things have come out about this attack. The first of which is that the individual who was neutralized at the attack, who carried out the attack, is actually a Druze from the area of Shvaram. Now, the Druze are not people who are known to carry out terror attacks or who have any desire or even reason to carry out a terror attack. And in fact, the leaders of the Druze community came out right away as soon as it became obvious that the person who carried out this attack was Druze. The leaders of the Druze community came out, first of all, to criticize the attack, and more than that, to say that there is no reason why members of the Druze community should be carrying out terror attacks. And in fact, as far as they are concerned, this should not even be labeled as a terror attack at all. It then turned out that the individual concerned may well have had some mental illness issues, and now the attack is really being ascribed to the individual's mental state of being. Ironically, the person who, the 70-year-old man who was killed in the attack, is actually an Israeli Arab. Mm. And so he is the main victim. There are a number of others who have been seriously injured. So the Israeli government has now formally come out to restate and to relabel what happened yesterday and say it's not a terror attack, and that it, in fact, it just seems to be an individual who was mentally unstable and who somehow came into possession of a weapon that allowed him to carry out this heinous attack and to kill and injure people. And so at the moment, the formal situation, the formal view is that this indeed was not a terror attack.
Wow. Quickly, if we do have a bit of time, the IDF reports into October 7th disaster and the impact on social media. This is interesting.
Well, yeah, the impact of social media rather than on social media, one of the interesting things that has come out of the report is a whole discussion about how social media has influenced the way that the attacks took place. And there are some really frightening bits of information that have come out about how much the attackers knew, how much our enemies knew about intimate details of our military installations, all gathered from social media. And so what the report says is that Hamas didn't even really need any special intelligence capability. All they needed to do was just to scroll around and to examine social media to see photographs that soldiers had posted on social media sites, which photographs showed potentially in the background some sensitive areas. According to this report, Hamas knew where all the cameras were stationed at the military base of Nahal Oz. They knew where all the security rooms were. They knew where all the security guards were stationed. They knew how things operated. Was gleaned from social media information, from photographs. There's IDF soldiers are officially not allowed to post on social media. Information that was shared just without even consideration, without even thinking twice about it, not considering the fact that it might have been divulging very, very sensitive information. And I think that this is a message not only to us as a country, to our security and to the IDF and to soldiers in the IDF, but it's a message to everybody in your everyday lives that this information is somehow, it seems insignificant, but can potentially have a massive significance to the way which people know about us and our movements, and in particular, some sensitive information about us.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property is in good hands.